Jaya Radha Madhava Gunja Bihari Jaya Madhava Gunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Gunja Bihari Gopijana Balabha Giribhadradhari Balabha Giribhadradhari Gopijana Balabha Giribhadradhari Giribhadradhari Yasoda Nandana Braja Janarandana Yasoda Nandana Braja Janarandana Yamuna Tira Manachadi Jamuna Tiravana Chadi Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi Jana Balabha Giribhadradhari Vedana Balabha Giribhadradhari Gopi Jana Balabha Giribhadradhari Yasoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana Yasoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachadi Jamuna Tira Vanachadi Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari
Shrimad His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki, Ananta Koti Vaishnavrinda Ki, Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki, Gaur Premanandi. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Text 33, Canto 8, Chapter 5 Ambastu yadrita udhara viryam Siddhyanti jivantyuta vardhamana Lokayato takila lokapala prasidatam nasa mahavibhutihi ambastu yadreta udara viryam sidyanti jivantyuta vardamana lokayato ta kila lokapala prasidatam na samaha vibhutihi ambhastu yadrita udara viryam sidyanti jivantyuta vardamana loka tuntakila lokapala lokila lokapala Ambhastu yadreta udara viryam sidyanti jivanti utta vardamana yatkayato takila lokapala prasidatam nasa mahavibhuttihi ambhastu yadreta udhara viryam sidyanti jivantyuta vardamana lokayato takila lokapala prasidatam natsa mahavibhuttihi ambaha. The masses of water seen on this planet and on others. Tu bat yat re taha his semen udhara viryam so powerful sidyanti are generated jivanti live uta indeed vardamana flourish loka all the three worlds yataha from which ata also akila lokapala all the demigods throughout the universe. Prasidatam may be pleased. Naha upon us. Saha he. Mahavibhutihi. A person with unlimited potency. Translation, the entire cosmic manifestation has emerged from water. And it is because of water that all living entities endure live, and develop. This water is nothing but the semen of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, may the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has such great potency, be pleased with us. Purport, short purport. Despite the theories of so-called scientists, the vast quantities of water on this planet and on other planets are not created by mixture of hydrogen and oxygen. Rather, the water is sometimes explained to be the perspiration and sometimes the semen of the Supreme Personality Godhead. It is from water that all living entities emerge, and because of water, they live and grow. If there were no water, all life would cease. Water is the source of life for everyone. Therefore, by the grace of the Supreme Personality of God, we have so much water all over the world. And I'm going to read a few more because they're all confrontational to modern science. Text 34. Soma, the moon, is the source of food grains, strength, and longevity for all the demigods. He is also the master of all vegetation and the source of generation for all living entities, as stated by learned scholars. The moon is the mind of the Supreme Personality Godhead. May that Supreme Personality Godhead, the source of all opulences, be pleased with us. Again, this same phrase at the end is the refrain, Prasidatam na sa mahavibhutim. Vibhuti means opulence. Mahavibhuta means great opulence. Sa mahavibhutim, his great opulence. So, Prasidatam na. May he be pleased upon us. Prasidatam na. He who has all this great opulence. So he's the maintainer, sustainer, well-wisher, and so forth. And now he's breaking down, Lord Brahma is breaking down the details of that, how he's the maintainer, provider, and so forth, through the agency of others, in this case, Soma. Purport. Soma, the predominating deity of the moon, is the source of food grains, and therefore the source of strength, even for the celestial beings, the demigods. He is the vital force for all vegetation. It's Soma. Unfortunately, modern so-called scientists, who do not fully understand the moon, describe the moon as being full of deserts. Since the moon is the source for our vegetation, how can the moon be a desert? The moonshine is the vital force for all vegetation. Therefore, we cannot possibly accept that the moon is a desert. End of purport. He's not done. He's got his boxing gloves on. Fire, Agnir. Fire, which is born for the sake of accepting oblations in ritualistic ceremonies, is the mouth of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Fire, listen to this, fire exists within the depths of the ocean to produce wealth. And fire is also present in the abdomen to digest food and produce various secretions for the maintenance of the body. Fire. May that supremely powerful personality of Godhead be pleased with us. Prasidatam na sa maha vibhutim. No purport about fire in the bottom of the ocean. Text 36. We'll end here. The sun god, that's fire, the sun god marks the path of liberation, which is called Archiradi Vartma. He is the chief source for understanding of the Vedas. He is the abode where the absolute truth can be worshipped, comma. He is the gateway to liberation, comma. And he is the source of eternal life as well as the cause of death, period. The sun god is the eye of the Lord. May that supreme Lord, who is supremely opulent, be pleased with us. Purport. The sun god is considered to be the chief of the demigods. He is also considered to be the demigod who watches the northern side of the universe. He gives help for understanding the Vedas, as confirmed in Brahma Samhita 5:52. Yajchakyur Asia Savita Sakala Grahanam Raja Samasta Suramurti Ashesha Tejaha Yas Yagya Pramati Samrita Kala Chakra Govindamadi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. Translation. The sun, full of infinite effulgence, is the king of all the planets and the image of the good soul. The sun is like the eye of the Supreme Lord. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, in pursuance of whose order the sun performs his journey, mounting the wheel of time. The sun is actually the eye of the Lord. In the Vedic mantras, it is said that unless the Supreme Personality of Godhead sees, no one can see. Unless there is sunlight, no living entity on any planet can see. Therefore, the sun is considered to be the eye of the Supreme Lord. That is confirmed here by the words Yach Chakshur Asit, that which the sun god is the eye of the Lord. Yach Chakshur Asit. Therefore the sun god is, you see, that is confirmed here by the words Yach Chakshur Asit, and in the Brahma Samhita by the words Yach Chakshur Esha Savita. The word Savita means the sun god. It means the sun, but it means the sun god, because without sun god you don't have sun. Any questions? Whenever there was opportunity to confront, almost always, whenever some opportunity arose to confront the faith, Prabhupada would call it blind faith, that people have in modern science, he would take the opportunity and confront, especially when it comes to statements of the Vedas. I'll just say a few things about this. Prabhupada said, I have not had the academic training of so many professors and PhDs and doctorates and this and that. However, because I have full faith in the Vedas, I can have discussion with any one of them and defeat any one of them if their conclusions are inconsistent with the Vedas. Now, he would do that not necessarily simply by saying, my authority says this, therefore you can't be right. He would enter into discussions where people would say, well, my authority says you're wrong. And Prabhupada would say, well, my authority says you're wrong. So rather than discuss my authority says and your authority says, let us talk common sense. Now, in this case, it's not exactly common sense. It's a mix of common sense and authority. But there's logic and reason connected with the authority. For example, modern science has found that without presence of moonlight, in addition to sunlight and water, vegetation doesn't grow properly. Conclusion, deductive. Therefore, moonlight is also required. Vedas say not only required, it's the source of life for vegetation, and therefore the presiding deity of vegetation is Soma. Now within the Bhagavatam, we have some pastimes that indicate this. Soma intervened when the Prachetas emerged from the water, the sea, after meditating underwater for 10,000 years. That's a long time to hold your breath, 10,000 years underwater. But by mystic power, they were able to do that. And when they emerged, the whole planet was overgrown with vegetation. And since they were sons of the king, they were concerned that the people in the kingdom would have land for agriculture, and so they started clearing the land in a very unique way. Both fire and wind came from their mouths, all of the Prachetas, and they were like human torches or torching all the forestation. And Soma came to intervene and said, stop. Your intention is good, but it's too much. Leave some forest. The forests are needed also for birds and small animals and for their livelihood in addition to human livelihood. So please stop. And they stopped. So he is described, he came because he's the presiding deity of vegetation. So he was protecting, along with nourishing, he was protecting. He's the god of vegetation. One of his functions is overseeing vegetation. So now back to the logic. Well, you need moonlight. And here the statement is he's that presiding deity. Now, you know, modern scientists will go harumph or some other message that says nonsense or whatever they might say. Why do you believe in this mythology? Where is the proof? Show me the evidence before you expect me to accept this. So their means of knowing is sense perception. Show me. Then there's another one, you know, reason and logic. That's another means of knowing something. And then there's Shabda. And so Prabhupada was convinced in Shabda and therefore would argue strongly against anybody, everybody, and be victorious in his own words. And you observe the dialogue, and Prabhupada said about himself, even when I was a small boy, I never lost an argument. I was always very good at debate. Except for one circumstance, when he met Bhaktisiddhanta, and Bhaktisiddhanta defeated him, and I was happy to be defeated by him. But otherwise, Prabhupada was very expert. So it's skill that some of us don't have. I'm one that doesn't have that debate skill. Prabhupada had. And he did so with full conviction in the authority of the Vedas. And so he would go out of his way intentionally to say challenging things or controversial things. You know, he said such things in relation to the role of women, deliberately, out of his way. I remember one time a reporter, lady reporter wearing a mini skirt, asked Prabhupada, why do you shave your head? And Prabhupada's reply was, we feel that better to have a cool head and warm legs than cold legs and a hot head. She didn't know what to say. He didn't mind being a little confrontational because her mood was like that. Her mood, you know, coming in front of a sadhu in a miniskirt. It was like, you know, miniskirt. It was inappropriate, to say the least. Not respectful, softer way to say. So he let her have it. And Prabhupada said, this is not necessarily a often repeated message, but I heard it from a few sources who are present in the room. After the fifth canto was published, there was turmoil in the Hare Krishna movement because Prabhupada did a lot of that, just, you know, against the paradigm of modern science, making statements. And the devotees that were traveling with Prabhupada at that time, he was in New York, and then he went through Canada and here and there, and they were asking, you know, what they're reading, and then asking him this question, that question. And at one point, Prabhupada said, this was deliberate. I wanted to shake the foundation of the blind faith that people have in modern science. It's the greatest obstacle, and he's written it elsewhere, the greatest obstacle. What's the greatest obstacle? The greatest obstacle is the blind faith people have in science, because it's providing them sense gratification through technology. It's not really science. It's technology, the push and pull of things, cause and effect of things. And you learn how this cause creates that effect, and you make a product, sell it in the marketplace. Like, you know, anyway, without going into it, cell phones. It's war technology. Big money from the government. Big military expenditure to create, you know, GPS system, etc., etc., etc. And then it becomes marketable. So that's technology, and people make their livelihood and rah, rah, rah. But has that made the quality of life better? GPS and cell phone technology and all the other drones and things that come from war expenditure. We become completely dependent upon the technology. The brain doesn't work anymore. If your GPS doesn't get a signal, you can't get to your destination because you forgot how to get to your destination, etc., without going on about it. Has it improved the quality of life? But because people feel, yes, it's my goodness, just observe sometime how many people are hooked on, they're walking down the street, a group of five people, and they all have their little device, and some are doing text messages, and some are talking to somebody, and they're not even with each other. You know, it's not enhancing quality relationships. Anyway, Hare Krishna. So, Prabhupada wanted to confront the blind faith that people have in so-called science. And he would call it so-called science, because science means to know. So what do they know? Their sense perception. So he's making the statement that hydrogen does not arise from combination of hydrogen and oxygen. It's not to say that there aren't molecules of hydrogen and oxygen that make up water. He's making the statement that says that's not where water comes from. He doesn't say there's not the combination of hydrogen and oxygen. Just saying it again. Just that's not the origin. What's the origin? The origin is the Supreme Lord. And from the Supreme Lord, this water that comes, from it, life evolves. Now, life doesn't just evolve from water by random, you know, chance occasion. There's theories that says once upon a time, da-da-da, there's a primordial soup where the primordial soup come from? It came from combination of hydrogen and oxygen. Where did hydrogen and oxygen come from? It's just one of the elements. Don't ask where it came from. And then hydrogen and oxygen got together and made some water. Okay? And then some bolt of lightning came, or some other, you know, where did the lightning come from? Don't ask that question. It just came. It's just part of nature that there is fire in the form of, anyway, and on, you know, the story goes. And with that energizing of the primordial soup, some amino acids got together. And then some amino acids combined with other amino acids and made, anyway, and on, and, you know, evolution of life. That's how it happened, chemical evolution. So even going back to where the water come from, Bhagavatam is saying where the water came from. Well, Brahma is saying, he's the engineer. He certainly knows where it came from. Where he knows the warehouse where he got the supplies to put the universe together. He has a relationship with a warehouse agent called Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. So he's making this Srimad Bhagavatam. So for us, this is the principal pramana, the means of knowing. Shabda, aparusheya shabda. Beyond the fallibilities of human existence. So Prabhupada had full conviction. I'll just share this and I'm going to end because I will allow for questions, then I have to depart for the airport. So a little report from our ISKCON 50 event in Beijing. One of the elements, one of the talks, it was 2 hours long. 2 hours long. Bhurijan was glorifying Prabhupada. It was very, very beautiful. But the approach that he took was starting with, you know, the statement of mission impossible. Guru Gauranga made a similar presentation at their ISKCON 50 event in Boston, something he called the unlikely journey. And I forwarded that to Subal. Did you receive that? Guru Gauranga's the unlikely journey. Didn't receive it. I'll see that it gets sent out. Okay. And you can circulate it to others if once you have it. I heard, I didn't see, I didn't review, but he made a video. He had a editing of the video of his presentation in Boston at Faneuil Hall, a posh, very expensive venue with a filled audience with, you know, VIPs and stuff. Something called The Unlikely Journey, something, nice title. But he's a brilliant person and made it, I'm sure, I haven't viewed it, a brilliant talk on that topic. I heard about it from those that did attend. So Bhurijan did a similar, I forget what he called it, but basically Mission Impossible, what Prabhupada was attempting to do from, you know, a position of the highest philosophy, from a very cultured person with all refinements, going to the West, and he showed pictures and videos of who his audience was. Totally cuckoo, you know, people drugged and uncivilized and rebellious, no authority, defy authority, taking authority, etc. You know, Mission Impossible. After going through that, like, thoroughly, with lots of video clips of showing the audience that Prabhupada had to address, what made it successful was the same thing that made him successful in speaking to the scientists, which was absolute faith in the Bhagavatam. This message, the Srimad Bhagavatam sound vibration, can take care of the janata agha, the sinful persons who are rebellious in spirit, towards anything that even has the fragrance of authority, totally rejecting, spirited rejection of authority, and exploring hedonism as their menu preference. If it feels good, do it. Right, Jitendra? If it feels good, that was one of the slogans. It was one of the slogans of the era. I'm not saying you espoused it, but it was one of the slogans of the era. So, with that hedonistic culture to take, the faith was in the power of the message of the Bhagavatam. So, he was successful for that reason. That spiritual potency came through. The empowerment was in that faith in the sound vibration of the holy name and the Bhagavatam. So just to conclude, similarly, Lord Brahma is doing like that with this refrain at the bottom. Perceive the tam, na. Na is us. Please show your mercy upon us. And you are infinitely powerful. Vibhuti, Vibhuti. Chapter 10, Bhagavad Gita, is Vibhuti Yoga. The opulence of the Absolute. Vibhuti means opulence. Mahavibhuti. I mentioned this already. Sa, Mahavibhuti. So it's third person. He, let us offer our prayers to he who has Mahavibhuti. Please be merciful upon us. It's a very humble supplication. And again, and again, and again, just like a mantra, and again, and again. It's similar to our message of Namaha. You know, mechanically we may say, Nama, Om Vishnu Padaya, etc. Or any of the other ways in which Namo or Namaha are presented in our Gayatri mantras there again and again. Namaha. Namaha. It means the same. It's without, according to Padma Purana, its meaning, Namaha's meaning is no false ego. If there's no false ego, what's left? I mean, no false ego is the foundation for the mind and intelligence. If you don't have false ego, what are your mind and intelligence going to do? They'll get lost. They'll collapse like a building without a foundation. The false ego is the foundation of our material existence. It's the first element that appears when pradhan separates into the elements, and as soon as the living entities contact, they get a covering of false ego before they even do anything, before they have a body to do anything with. We become contaminated with false ego. And then the struggle of material existence, trying for happiness in so many ways. So Namaha, it's very meaningful. So the message of the Bhagavatam, I'll conclude. The message of Bhagavatam is not merely information. Information is important, but it's not the essence by any means. It's this submission. As this last line is saying, as Brahma is, he's, Subal articulated it very nicely, you know, a couple of times in previous classes. Brahma's helping the demigods with their problem by sound vibration, by his own mood, by his own spirit, spiritual submission spirit, to take shelter of the personality of God. That's a solution. The spiritual solutions to material problems is this one. And we won't find a solution as long as we're struggling with our false ego and the rest that goes along with it, as including the demigods. So in these verses, there's details about vegetation, about fire, about water, about the moon, about the sun. He's giving a picture of universal configuration. And the demigods are administrators of the universe. And he's just reminding them of what they forgot. They forgot because they had a problem. When you have a problem, your attention commonly goes to the problem and you forget, you know, the foundation of things. Struggle for material existence. We forget Krishna. But the cause is forgetfulness of Krishna, and that's the solution. Remember Krishna. Very simple. So he's doing it in a very elegant way. Because the demigods, they're very qualified. They get it. So any comments or questions? Subal, you have something?
I was thinking of a couple of questions, Guru Maharaj. One is, Prabhupada was able to present the truth of the Vedas, of the Srimad Bhagavatam, very directly and we don't have that.
No.
And so when you approach a public, then and these confrontations happens, you know, in terms of having to deal with this blind faith that is there for scientists, mm-hmm. that definitely it causes, as you say, it's one of the main problem.
Yes.
That society has. How do you do that?
How do we, when we don't have the qualification that Prabhupada had, how do we respond?
Yeah.
To the blind faith paradigm? That's your question.
Yes.
It depends. I mean, one very simple practical thing is to go through the Pratyaksha, Anuman, and Shabda. My dear sir, you have strong conviction in Pratyaksha, but please consider. Please just address the paradigm, and paradigm is very, you know, that paradigm argument is very strong. It will continue. They will say, yeah, but, or they may not even say, yeah, they'll just say, wait a minute, you know, science is predictable. Experiment, observation, conclusion. That's what science is. And we can say, you have that model. That's fine. We like that model. Here's the experiment. Here's the observation. Here's the conclusions. And those that have reached those conclusions are presenting their conclusions. The Vedic system. But it's not based simply on the observation part. It's another model of evidence, and these are their conclusions. Anyway, it depends on the person and the circumstance. Some people just, many of those people, not all of them, many of those people are it's like speaking to a fundamentalist Christian. Where the discussion begins is where the discussion ends. They're not really interested in going anywhere. They're just interested in arguing with some fundamental, presumptions or unchangeable, they can't even look at the assumptions. There's different things you can do with those people, like, you know, give them some prasadam. Or say, you know, we accept, I've had this discussion, we accept micro evolution, but not chemical evolution. They go, wow, you know something about evolution besides your dogma. So micro evolution means it is part of the Vedic picture that life can adapt to the environment. That's a microevolution. examples that they do, because someone told me about this, in their graduate student in microbiology, a devotee had to teach microevolution. So he did it. But, you know, he didn't go to the chemical evolution, and therefore this, you know, microevolution, they grow some bacteria. And while they're having their theory, the bacteria grows, and then they introduce some antibiotic, and then some of the bacteria gets killed, but some of the bacteria lives because it adopts a defense against the antibiotic. So it transforms in a perceivable way. So that's microevolution. And you can do that within one semester, but to speak of long periods of time. So, you know, the extrapolation of the principle goes to, therefore, in long periods of time, here's how life came about. Survival of the fittest. And adaptation to the environment. So some birds have longer beaks and because they eat these foods and therefore they survived and all those. And others have shorter beaks because they had another food and therefore they survived over long periods of time. And that's how you get, it's microevolution. It's not chemical evolution. You can't extrapolate from that life comes from chemicals. And it's in, you know, it's persons that are, if you to argue, to have a dialogue with those people, you have to become a little bit knowledgeable. Otherwise, they run circles around you, think you're just a dogmatic person. I dismiss you. So stay within the territory that you are familiar with, unless you're a little bit familiar with some of these other things. Second question?
I have to remember.
Huh?
I have to remember it.
Okay, you know, just pass the microphone. Anyone else?
In text 35, it's mentioned that in the depths of ocean, fire exists.
Yeah.
I was just curious what ocean it's referring to.
Well, just like within the body, there's the fire of digestion. Now, it's not like, oh my God, there's a fire inside kind of thing. Any more than, let's say, electricity is nothing but fire. Now, there's not a fire in this cable. There's electricity in this cable, but it's in the category of the five elements of fire. And you can break it down and explain how is that, but it's fire. Where did electricity, do I need to do that or you're okay?
And
there's the light of the sun, there's fire. And then so the sun comes to the earth, and the earth, then because of the fire of the sun and the moon, then there's transformation through what scientists call photosynthesis of that fire, and it's stored in wood or petroleum or the rainfall that comes down in the form of hydroelectric power, and then you withdraw that from the water that's going downstream in a river. There's electricity, and they're just removing the electricity, the fire that then can power your whatever it is, or the wind through wind electric generators through wind. Where does the wind come from? From the heat of the sun. So there's electricity within the wind, and the electricity within the rivers, and the electricity within the tree, excuse me, fire, within all of those. And that's in, so, and then you can extract it, and you can do things with it. It's fire, it's the fire element. It's a principle. Don't narrow it down to, you know, literally the fire that you're accustomed to. It's a principle, it's an element. So within the ocean, that element is there, and when that element is there with certain other combinations of things, then jewels are produced.
Yeah, I understand that. I was mostly just kind of focusing on the point. It says the fire produces wealth, and what activity or process?
Well, the that element within water, that fire element that's within water combines with other things to make jewels, thus wealth.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Now that's a Vedic statement, and Brahma is simply, because he's the spokesperson of the Vedas, is saying it's true. Now, modern science can say, show me, or mythology. Why do you, you're an intelligent person, why do you accept mythology? And we accept on the authority of the Vedas. It's not mythology. And, you know, we could go through the steps of how it is not mythology. Someone else?
Thank you, Hare Krishna.
Yes? Mitch and then Jordan and then we're done. I have to go.
Maharaj, I'm wondering what the validity is.
What
the validity is to social science research.
What's the validity of social science?
Yeah, social science research.
Social science.
Yeah.
Do you have some, can you narrow it down a little bit?
Like, for example, I was in school and there's sociology classes, communication classes where there's...
Oh, it's total speculation. What validity does it have? Shreds. There's observable phenomena, but then there's interpretation of that observable phenomena. So it's not, their senses are imperfect, their reasoning powers are fallible. So we don't place much credence. It doesn't mean they have nothing to say and we trash them. We're very careful with what comes from social scientists. Completely contaminated by the bodily conception of life, no spiritual conception of life. So put those things together with imperfect senses and reasoning faculties that are imperfect. We're very careful. Now, supposing somebody is on the path of becoming, as a profession, a social worker. You got to take those courses. And, you know, they take those courses on, my language is with parallel intelligence. You have to get your A's in your exams, and you also have to see, you know, in a sterilized fashion, what is the Vedic picture compared to this? Why is it so different? Now, it doesn't mean there isn't helpful information, but the foundation of that perhaps helpful information needs a lot of, you know, caution, and so we're careful in what we accept and as well as what we apply, because it can take our own consciousness over the cliff or in the ditch and become convinced in something. That's the way to go, etc. Does that help? Okay. Jordan, last question, then we're going to go. Slowly and clearly, okay?
What is the proper way to change our conceptions to the conceptions of the Bhagavatam, accepting...
Hearing. Hearing submissively. Hearing actively and submissively. Similar question to what you asked before, you know, what's the best way to read the Bhagavatam? With the spirit of I want to know. So the spirit of I want to know is not, I believe. That's not the spirit. It's, I want to know. And when if I want to know, well, wait a minute, I have this other conception that I'm, it's, you know, it's part of my baggage that I heard since eighth grade science class that there's evolution. And there's a big bang and there's all that stuff. And now this, but I want to know. I don't want to just believe, I want to know. So here, with the spirit of I want to know, with submission, submission doesn't mean just blindly accept, it means I want to know. I accept the authority in principle. I accept this is authoritative information, but I want to understand it. And then I want to bring it inside, and then I want to live my life accordingly and see what happens. That's the experiment. Is it improving the quality of life? Is it helping me to understand the world in which I live with greater clarity? Is it practical? That's part of I want to know. It's not just information want to know, it's quality of life. My experience is hearing regularly from Srimad Bhagavatam completely changes how you experience life. Qualitatively. Life doesn't necessarily change. Kali Yuga's continuing to advance. But how it impacts you and your consciousness and how you feel about that and what you do about the way you feel about that and the circumstances of life completely change. And that's what's meant, a transformation. Awakening of a consciousness of Krishna, purpose number two that I'm going to speak about this Sunday. Purpose number two of ISKCON. It awakens a consciousness of Krishna in all things, all aspects of life. It's mystical. That's what to do. Okay, I'm going to end. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.